I think it's a very interesting piece of psychology buried in some of the primary sources in the Rishonim that has to do with Emuna. And I just thought that happens to be nogea to the parsha that we just read, but it's also nogea to really the basis for everything we do, as you mentioned, you know. And the idea is, if you look, let's start with the Sefer HaChinuch, the Sefer HaMitzvus. You know, Yitzias Mitzrayim, is the foundation of everything that we have, everything that we believe, because Yetzias Mitzrayim was the first time that actually anyone, eyewitnesses, witness the Creator in action. You know, Adam HaRishon was created at the end of the sixth day and didn't bear eyewitness testimony to the creation. He found a world completely created for him. And the first time that we witnessed, or that humans witnessed, and that was Klal Yisrael witnessing, the Creator in all of his creative powers and control, detailed, minute detailed control of the laws of nature, which indicated his creative powers. You know, there'll be blood and there won't be, there'll be frogs, there'll be darkness, there'll be light, all of this. So this was in Mitzrayim. So Mitzrayim really represented the foundation of the Emunah of Klal Yisrael, and I dare say the world, because the world's beliefs, for the vast majority of the world's beliefs, are based on the biblical account, and that's Yetzias Mitzrayim and the eyewitness testimony to it. But there's some, as I mentioned, there's some very interesting psychology hidden in the in between the lines, so to speak. So let's read a little bit. The Sefer HaChinuch mentions the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Saper Be'inyan Yetzias Mitzrayim B'Leil Chamisha also B'Nisan. 15th of Nisan at night, the Seder, have to tell the story, the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and to praise Hashem. We say Hallel also, that's part of it, because part of the recognition and appreciation of what happened is our expression of the Hallel. In fact, the Ralbag says very interestingly, says that after they passed through the Yamsuf, had they not sang the Shira, then they would have lost that Emuna, to some extent at least, that they gained on the Yamsuf. And the Yamsuf, they gained the ultimate Emuna. Chazal say what a Shivcha saw on the Yamsuf, Yechezkel ben Buzi didn't see in the greatest of his Nevuos. And yet, not expressing the appreciation, the praise, and the thanks to Hashem, they could have lost some of that. Because unless we express it, unless we're willing to recognize what happened and admit to it, then we sort of tend to overlook it and forget it and bury it and dilute it, take it for granted. And so we need to, you know, that's very important. Anyway, so that's part of the mitzvah. Look what the Chinuch says, the Sheresh HaMitzvah. Mashakos of Inyan HaKorban Pesach, which is to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Ve'imin HaTeimo Imbo Olonu Mitzvahs Rabo Yisal Seh. Mitzvahs HaSeh, Mitzvahs Lo Yisal Seh. On Yetzias Mitzrayim, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have many, many mitzvahs to remember. Ki hu yisod godol ve'omud chozok b'teiro seinu ve'emun aseinu. It's a foundation and a pillar, a strong pillar in our Torah and in our Emuna. V'alkein onu oimrim le'olam b'birchoseinu v'tfiloseinu zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every time we talk Yetzias Mitzrayim, zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, everything, mitzvah, Shabbos, Kiddush, tefillin, tzitzis, mezuzah, zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. V'yishu ois u'moifes gomur b'chidush ha'olam. It's a sign and a moifes, and a wonder that took place in Chiddush HaOlam. We saw Chiddush HaOlam, literally. If a Jew and a Mitzri drink from the same cup, and one is drinking water, and one is drinking blood, if they stand in the same room, and one is frozen in darkness, as one is seeing broad daylight. If the frogs go up to a certain point, they're all over the place in every inside and out, their bodies and their beings and their homes and not touching where the Jews are. You see creation, and then when it recedes, you see that total control over creation. So this is the Amdafi Kadmoin. We see that there's a God who is the Kadmo means that he's always there. You know that he didn't come on the scene later on. We can tell that he's in total control. He desires and he does what he desires. Poyel kol hanimtzois. He actualizes everything that happens. El hayesh kel hayesh shehem hanimtzois el hayesh shehem. El ha, what? El hayesh, shehem olov. I don't know. Maybe it's kel hayesh, shehem olov. I don't know. I'm not sure how to read that. Okay. Uve yodo lishanoisem. El hayesh sheyachpoitz. Something is strange here. This loshen is not in my chinuch. Maybe there's a dollar on the bottom. It says, wait. I don't, all right, whatever it is, and he can change them. B'chol zman min hazman, kimo she'oso b'Mitzrayim she'shino tivei ha'olam b'shvileinu. We saw in Mitzrayim he changed all the laws of nature for us. V'oso lonu oisus mechudoshim gedolim v'atzumim, and he did for us signs, new ones, great ones. Overwhelming ones. This puts silence to anyone who would deny creation. And it sustains the emuna in the, I guess it means in the knowledge that Hashem has in everything that goes on in the world. And his hashkocha and his capability are on the general and on the specific, all of them. So this is basically what we see out of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But I want to point out here that we talk about Hashem as the creator. We saw his creative powers. And he says, Kimo she'oso b'Mitzrayim, she'shino tivei ha'olam bishvileinu, v'oso lonu oisos mechudoshim gedolim v'atzumim. It sounds like, and this is going to be corroborated in the Ramban even more so, that the power of this emuna, of these miracles that we saw, to influence us in our emuna and our belief and our knowledge of Hashem and His powers and what He does and His involvement and His mastery over creation and so forth, have something to do with the fact that He changed them, that He did this all. Shino tivei ha'olam bishvileinu. What if he would have been Shmishane Tive Ha'olam, not Bishvileinu? We see, what if I would have stepped in on the scene and I see the Creator in all of his creative powers, but there's nothing in it for me? It isn't Bishvileinu. It isn't V'osolonu Oisus Umeksim Chudoshim. It sounds like that part of our ability to recognize in the fullest scope the existence of Hashem, the powers of Hashem, and the involvement of Hashem, and the creative and the creations of Hashem, has to do with the fact that it's done for us. There has to be something. What's that? Yeah. That's right. It has to be, in other words, if we're not personally the beneficiaries of it, if we're not personally connected to it, it's too overwhelming, it's too abstract, it's too remote, maybe it's even too threatening. But if he's doing it for me, and there's what to be gained for me, and I am personally involved, and I'm a beneficiary, a direct, a special, a singled out beneficiary for it, that has a different power. Then I'm on board. Now really, the upshot of all of this really is that emuna requires a heart that is motivated besides just a mind that is evaluating. Because the reality is that our minds are captives to our hearts. Now, emuna, by definition, is a very difficult sell. Why? What do you mean? It's obvious. It's blatantly obvious. Yeah, except one thing. It means there's a creator, there's a purpose, there's responsibility. That equals burden, obligation, pressure. Let me reconsider. You know, there's a beautiful piece from Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman. It used to be in the Kovetz Ha'oros on Yevomos. Now I think it's printed in the, there's a Kovetz Ma'amorim from Rebbe Elchanan. And he says, how could there ever be a mitzvah of emunah? You must believe in Hashem. You must believe in His koichos, in His as His creator, and His powers, and His control, and so forth. If I do, shkoyach, I don't need your mitzvah. And if I don't, you tell me what I should believe, what I must believe. How can you tell a person such a thing? So he says like this, a very, very interesting thing. He says, if a child will be born with mature adult intelligence, open his eyes and just look at this world, he would see that there's a creator. The order of things, the magnificence, the magnitude, the interactions, I mean, especially today, what science has discovered and what goes on inside. I think they say inside one cell, they did a simulation that is more complex than everything that goes on in New York City, in Manhattan. Like all the different, that old video thing I once saw. I mean, like, but the problem is this. We're not born with mature intelligence. We're born, we don't really think. And the first thing we develop is desire. I want this, I want that, I want pleasure, I want sweet, I want that. Whatever the desire that a baby has, and as we grow more and more. By the time the adult mature intelligence sits in, there's a conflict between my desires and my realization. And the desires, or rather the threat of curbing those desires, compromises my ability to see clearly. Because the human being does not see with his mind alone. He sees with his heart. And unless the heart is on board, or if the heart is moving in a different direction, unless he sees there's something in it for him, unless he's motivated to allow himself to focus and to think about it, it could pass him by just like nothing. And he sees it all, he knows it all, it's intellectually solid, it's compelling beyond belief, but it doesn't bring him to belief because he doesn't want to. So we see that built in to the Hakora, all of the miracles that took place, is this idea that he did it, it's all for us. Here's a God who is doing all of this. He's doing it all for me. It's something personal. There's a personal relationship there. There's Ashkocha Protis. Oh, that's a different story. And you did Lonu Oisus Mechudoshim? Ah, that's a different level. Now, to a certain extent, there is emuna that can come just from seeing it. Paroi finally saw it. But he had charota the next day, and he was out running. Well, 7 days later, he was out running out after them to get them back to come to Mitzrayim and go by the, you know, on the way to the Yamsuf. So, even if you conceal it, it doesn't stick. The heart controls the mind. Anyone who thinks that he makes decisions with his mind is naive, because if anything, the heart is in certainly a full partner and probably a controlling partner and certainly a managing partner, and maybe even a controlling partner. This is now the same thing when it comes to the famous Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, that talks about all of the mitzvahs of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, because he says all of the philosophies of the Mitzrim were debunked, all of the previous philosophies, not only the Mitzrim, that the world existed forever and that God doesn't speak to people and that he has no interest in what goes on in this world and so forth and so on, all these things. Yetzias, the miracles of Mitzrayim, of the Makkos, debunked everything. But it's interesting that when he starts, he says, no, he didn't give me the whole thing here. I asked for this. I didn't get the whole piece. No. Okay, but let's just go to the end. And at the beginning, it's also very clear that, you know, this is happening for us. But look at the end. Umin ha-nisim ha-gedoylim ha-mefusomim. From all these great nisim, what comes out? What do we get? Odom moide benisim nistorim. He comes to admit to the hidden miracles. That's the Ashgocha Potis. Mehem shehem yesoid ha-Torah kula. They are the foundation of the whole Torah. Ashgocha Potis. She'ein lo'odom chelek b'toiras Moshe Rabbeinu. A person that doesn't have a share in the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, ad sheyamin b'chol dvareinu u'mikreinu kulam nisim. Everything that happens, all of these nisim, everything that happens to us, we are personally involved. Ein bohem teva u'menhogu shel olam. Bein b'yochad bein b'rabim. Elim yaseh mitzvahs, yaseh u'schor. If he does mitzvahs, he's going to get schar. And if he doesn't, he won't. And that's mamish, the whole inyan of the whole emunah. But it seems very clear over here too. It says, you have no chelik in Teras Moshe. I don't understand. I saw the miracles. I know there's a creator. I know he's in charge. I know what he does. I know he's involved. I know everything. The only thing is, I don't believe in Hashgocha Pratis. I don't think he's personally involved in my life. So how can you tell me, ain lo chelik b'Teras Moshe? I'm a mamin. I'm a believer. I believe in God. I believe there's Ashkocha Klolis. I believe there's Ashkocha Klolis. He takes care of the world. He created the world. He controls the world. He does all the miracles of Mitzrayim he did. I just don't believe that. In fact, maybe it's even a humility on my part. I don't believe he's going to get involved in my personal life and deal with my stupidities. And come on, you know. And I dare say that it has to do with that, because if a person doesn't bring it down to the nitty-gritty of his own life, then he really doesn't have that real emunah. The emunah is influenced by what it does for me. And unless I see that this hashgocha is in my life, then the concept is vague. I can do lip service to it. I could maybe, I believe it. You know, belief. But it's not real. It's not actualized. Because we need to draw it down to our, it has to be personal. I am involved. He's doing it for me. I'm the personal beneficiary. Otherwise, I can't see this broader picture. And I would like to suggest that, just the thought that occurred to me after seeing this, that maybe besides the standard kavona in Shema Yisrael lies this secret as well. Shema Yisrael. We make a declaration to Klal Yisrael, Hashem, and the Mishnah Berurah says that Kavona should be even say the Shem Hashem in Shema. And the first pasuk is he's the Adoin Hakol, the Master of all, and he's Hoyo Hoyve Veyiyeh. He was, he is, and he always will be. This is the Creator, and he always was. Hashem Elokeinu. Elokeinu refers to our personal. He's our God. He does Hashgocha Protis. That's one of the things that Mepharshim say. Elokeinu, he's involved with Klal Yisrael. He does Hashgocha Protis. Hashem again. I repeat the Shem Hashem, the Adoin Hakol, Ohoyoviyah, Echod. He's one. In other words, maybe, just a suggestion, maybe included in this posuk is the idea that don't dare separate between the Hashem, who's the Adoin Hakul and the Hoyo Hoy Viviyeh, and the Elokeinu. Hashem Shehu Elokeinu, Hu Echod, is one and the same. Because, and by the way, one of the kavonas that they say when you say the Shem Hashem, you know, Yemarich Be'echod, is Hashem's Hashkocha Proti. He's the Siba of everything in the world. He's the Mashkiach Proti. He's in control of everything. He takes care of our personal things. Because unless we focus on the personal connection that we have, we are not motivated, we are not capable, we are diffused and unfocused and just like disconnected from this whole idea of Hashem with all of His powers. So it's extremely important. The Elokeinu is very, very significant. And the truth of the matter is, every bracha that we make, we recite that Hashem is the source of brachas, Baruch to Hashem, Elokeinu, and the Melech Olam. He's the Melech Olam, who's Elokeinu. It's that combination that we need. The Melech Olam will get lost in the shuffle unless we realize Shehu Elokeinu. And this really requires a lot of focus, a lot of attention, a lot of focus. It's just the awareness that Emuna, with all of its power, cannot do the job unless there's that sense, what's in it for me? I'm personally connected. I'd like to mention at this point something which might be a little controversial. And that is, bedafka. Anyway, and that is that there are many who attempt to teach and convince about Emunah. But they believe or they talk and act and teach as if it were an intellectual pursuit. And nothing can be further from the truth. They'll tell you proofs. They'll tell you all this evidence that we have, and we know this. It's beautiful stuff. But unless they give me the motivation to believe, I'm not even listening. If I don't know that it's good for me, that it's going to make me happy, I'm not focused. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not paying attention. It doesn't relate to me. It doesn't talk to me. It's a foreign language. Because the only intellectual process that successfully convinces a person of something is when he's motivated to listen, when he's motivated to analyze, when he's motivated to pay attention. Alachas kama v'kama, if he has motivation not to pay attention, and he certainly has, because we're very sophisticated today. And we know that as soon as I recognize that there is a creation, that there is a creator, that he is in control, that he has given us a Torah Har Sinai, that he wants us and expects us to do this, that. Oh, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. It's so overwhelming that I can't deal with it. I don't want to pay attention to it. But this goes even further. So that's very important. Anytime, if you want, for children, for students, for anyone you talk to, you want to convince them, I would say, if you don't first show them what's in it for them, don't waste your time. It's almost like, it's even if, yeah, oh yes, oh yeah, got it, makes sense, I got it, I believe, tomorrow they won't be there anymore. The only thing that holds it in place, that's what happens. A lot of people go to these lectures or these seminars or these things, and they hear all about this, emunah, oh yeah, I believe it, I buy it, right? And the next day it's gone. And worse than that, they develop an immunity because they survived it and it didn't stick. But now at least next time it's not as exciting. I survived it. You know, I can survive the next time too. It's a very, very, very dangerous thing. But it really goes even a step further. And that is that not only do they have to see its personal relevance and benefit to them, they really have to be deeply convinced to want this and to really believe that this could make me happy. Because if I don't believe that this is going to make me happy, if I don't believe that it's something personal and it's going to enhance the quality of my life, then the whole thing is like, I can't even pay attention to it. I will fight it. I will rebel against it. Now, as long as I'm here, I'd like to mention one more thing. Now, this is not even a modern thing, but it's certainly a modern thing. I believe it must go back further, but I can't tell how far back. The benefits in the next world are not enough for most people. I remember my day. up as a kid. Oh, people were suffering, but in jener Welt ist sein azui gut. It's going to be so good in the next world. Nobody today has patience for jener Welt. Nobody wants to wait for the next world, especially young people and even older people. Yesterday, all benefits have to be retroactive because I'm used to everything. Instantaneous, not instantaneous, more than instantaneous. I don't know, there must be a new word for instantaneous. More instantaneous than instantaneous. And Mimela, oh, you know, wait, you'll see. So we have to be able to articulate, and in order to be Mekabel, the Emunah, they have to be able to realize that the benefits are in the here and now. A very, very critical element. And it is in the here and now, because a person forges a relationship with Hashem. It gives him strength. It gives him courage. It gives him encouragement. Excuse me. It gives him peace of mind. It helps him to resolve his issues. That's where Bitochen comes in so much, because Bitochen, and I've mentioned this before, Bitochen is the motivation to want to have Emunah. So very, very important. The here and now, the present, the immediate, that's has to be beneficial. And this has to do with ourselves, it has to do with our children, it has to do with everybody. But there is another point, I think, that's very important as well. And that is, if we wish to establish Emunah, which means truth, to know the truth, the heart, and even the mind, but the mechanisms inside a person which tend to fool him and confuse him, one of the dangers there is if I don't have a clear standard for truth. Because without a clear standard for truth, then how do I know? Oh, yeah, I believe. I believe. How much do you believe? Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is it? Well, it's 7, it's 8, today it's 9, tomorrow it's 6, yesterday it's 2. What? I don't know. What do I know? I believe. What does I believe? What does believe mean? And ad kedei kach, it may even get to the point where I believe this is not a Jewish term at all. I have to make a leap of faith. Leap of faith is not a Jewish term. We have testimony to what happened in Mitzrayim. We have eyewitness testimony to what happened on the Amsuf. We have eyewitness testimony to what happened in Har Sinai. It's been passed down from generation to generation. Just think about the Seder alone, how it's been passed down, so many chains of transmission, and Torah that's read publicly, and everything that we do, and all of the mitzvahs, and it's the same thing, and over thousands of years. So it's like, you know, It's real, but I have to have some standard by which to judge it. And that standard has to be, and this is very critical, I think, and unless we establish that standard, both for ourselves and for others, we might end up sometimes in difficulty. And that standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. Nothing that we do is beyond the shadow of a doubt. I cannot say beyond the shadow of a doubt that there's not poison in this. It's beyond reasonable doubt. It has nothing to do with you. It could be the thing that... It's only beyond... We live beyond reasonable doubt. That's all. Everything we do is beyond reasonable doubt. And anyone who is looking to be convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt will be cursed to see shadows for the rest of his life. So it's very important. So when we have a standard for truth, we can say, hey... Yeah, this is beyond reasonable doubt. There's no way that you could question this. There's no way to question Yetzias Mitzrayim beyond reasonable doubt when hundreds of millions and maybe billions of people throughout the millennia have been telling the same story, reading the same text, doing the same props at the Seder, the same date for 3,300 years. And nobody ever perpetrated such a... It's beyond reason. Is it possible? There's science fiction in the world too. It would be possible, but it's beyond reasonable doubt. And that has to be the standard. There's one thing I'd like to mention, which I think it's significant, and I think people are beginning to wake up to it. You know, many years ago, I was scheduled to give a lecture about, the topic was strengthening Emunah in the classroom. And I was told a couple of days before that I have to change the topic, or at least the title. We don't talk about those things. We don't deal with those things. We don't. We're talking about yeshiva classroom, not a public school classroom. You know, like. And Baruch Hashem, today, that no longer happens. There is an awareness that we have to deal with these things. That's true. But we have to know how to deal with it. And the key to the psychology of Emunah is this concept, that it's as much in the heart, if not more in the heart, than it is in the mind. And there has to be motivation. There has to be open-mindedness. There has to be benefit. There has to be reason to at least consider, to at least evaluate, to see if it is beyond a reasonable doubt. Otherwise, it's just, it doesn't. And if it gets in, it'll be right out. So I want to share with you a little story. And part of this process is getting people to focus, because they really have to pay attention. If they don't pay attention, then, you know, when you don't pay attention, you don't make a kinyan on the concept. You heard it. I have some vague idea of what you're talking about, but I couldn't really say it over. And even if I said it over, it would be more like a parrot rather than like a human. And I don't have to. I have to focus, focus, focus. So I'll tell you a little story about focus. There was one of my children in Los Angeles was at a lecture, and there was a speaker that was a soldier in the Israeli army on the Yom Kippur War. He was stationed on the Suez Canal. And we know that on the Suez Canal, they were very unprepared for this war when it came to Yom Kippur. And he says there were about 10 soldiers there, very small, number 15, I don't know, but really ridiculous. And all of a sudden, they see crossing the canal an army full of Egyptians, armed and ready to. Ad kedei kach that they knew they had to surrender. They didn't stand a chance. It's all over. All of a sudden, they're coming at them, the Egyptian army, and the Egyptians put down their weapons and raise up their hands. They're surrendering. Of course, you know, our boys took advantage of the moment, you know, and took them. But one of them asked them, "Why did you guys surrender?" He says, "Why do we surrender?" He says, "Coming down from the hills behind you, we saw legions, armies of tanks and soldiers and this, all armed and this. We were outnumbered so much that we had no choice. There was no such army or soldiers or tanks or anything." So, but that was what happened. And these soldiers were saved. That was a story. So my daughter walks up to this guy and asks him, and he's a Baal Tshuva. So she says to him, "Is that what influenced you to become a Baal Tshuva?" He says, "No, absolutely not. Didn't have any influence on my life. Nothing whatsoever. Just passed me by." So she said, "What influenced you to become a Baal Tshuva?" So he said, "Many years later, I fell in on some speech, some lecture, and I heard someone telling over this story. And I said, 'Wow, that's me!' That's how I became a Baal Tshuva." So here you have what would seem to be just the opposite of the reality. Here, I experienced this myself, but I didn't focus. I wasn't ready to focus. I wasn't motivated to focus. Maybe I didn't even want to focus. Maybe I liked the idea of this story of 10, 15 of our guys taking over this whole unit of the Egyptian army. And, you know, but he says, "When I heard somebody tell this story, I was focused on it. I guess it's years later, I wasn't, you know, feeling my ego. That's how I became a Baal Tshuva." So it's so, the focus is so critical. The information is clear. The Emunas Yisroel is obvious. It's blatant. It's aleph beis. There's nothing, there's no religion in the world that has eyewitness, millions of eyewitness testimony passed down accurately without contest, without dispute from generation to generation, both to Yetzias Mitzrayim and to the Kriyas Yamsuf and to the Maimon Har Sinai and to the Nisim of the Midbar, which we also celebrate on Sukkot. And it's there's nothing like it in the world. It's historically there's no precedent nor did anyone copy it. And Agav, why do you think they didn't copy it? What? Yeah, you can't get it. No, but more than that, you can't get away with it. You can't get away with telling a group of people that they witnessed miraculous events that they didn't witness. You could tell them you witnessed. I had a revelation, I had a mirror, I had a dream, I had a, yeah, either you did or you didn't. Some might believe you, some might not. But I can't, even a small group like we have here, I can't tell you that you witnessed all these miracles, the chandelier jumping up and down, and the table dancing over there back and forth, and who knows what. You won't believe me, that guy's out of his mind. And they talk about millions of eyewitnesses. And they wrote it down in the first person. They said, we witnessed. The Torah repeats tens of times, Atem re'isem, zechor al tishkach masheroi nechem. It's not like we said, oh, we believe there was such a thing, and we tell it to our children. We passed on a document, that first generation, that said that they were eyewitnesses. Everyone telling the same story. It's mind-boggling. And nobody could ever copy it because you can't get away with such a thing, even though they copied so much from us. And it's interesting, you know, it's a little bit touchy, the story, but we used to tell this story many years ago about a Chassidish Rebbe that passed on. He left two children. There was a big dispute about who was going to take over. So one day, one of the sons comes to the Beis Medrash and says, everything's resolved. Father appeared to me in a dream, and he said, I should be the Rebbe. His brother says to him, Yankel, if Father wanted you to be the Rebbe, he should have appeared to me in the dream. You know, you could say whatever you want, but if he, I have to know it. So, but you saw it, you witnessed it. That's something else. So the power is great, the power is tremendous, but it requires the realization that it's good for me, that it's going to make my life happy, that he's involved with my life personally. It requires a standard for truth, and it requires focus. Without those ingredients, the whole thing could just pass us by. So, and the truth of the matter is, maybe just one more point, and that is that today, with those people that are questioning, the truth of Yahadus, generally speaking, the questions are not intellectual. The questions are emotional. You know, because really, it's too painful, it's too difficult, they're not successful, they're not happy, they're not getting along with their family, not getting along with the yeshiva, not getting along here, whatever it may be, all kinds of too much pressure, too much. Well, the Maisa, still, we have to be able to deal with the intellectual issue. Because even if the intellectual issues are just buffers and excuses, unless we can deal with them, we won't be able to get to the core issues. So the core issues are probably, in Ruba de Ruba, in most cases, are emotional. But you also have to deal with the intellectual buffer, the intellectual shield to get beyond that in order to be able to get to the core issues. And therefore, these things are very important to deal with. And the way to be able to deal with it is to begin by touching on the emotional and showing the benefit and the motivation. And then people become at least more open-minded to listen and hopefully to think. And the truth is very, very compelling and becomes very obvious. And just to add one more thing, which two concepts, maybe to get beyond the first stage of resistance. And sometimes people, maybe three things, forgive me, people won't even be willing to listen. So you got to have a very, very quick stimulant, which just stimulates some thinking, you know. Like, I like to suggest three things. Number one, nobody ever called us stupid. You know, we've been called everything except for stupid. The greatest minds of all of history recognize this as truth. How come they didn't have these questions? How come they didn't have these doubts? How come they remained who they were? Something to think about. Point number two, and this is truly mind-boggling. How could the Jewish people and its religion and its Torah survive close to 2,000 years of the most oppressive exile and the most oppressive experiences ever in the history of humanity? And every effort was made to eradicate our religion, to eradicate our bodies. And here we are. All of our enemies are in the museums. And we're still, you know. That's point number two. And point number three, which we really alluded to, is that forget the truth of Torah, but just the claim, the audacity of the Jewish claim. Nobody ever dared to make a claim of public miracles and public revelation and public appointment in front of millions of eyewitnesses of the prophet, of the leader, of the spokesman, of the one who's supposed to carry the message of God to them. They all read the Bible. Nobody ever made such a claim. And the Bible itself, forgive me, Moshe Rabbeinu, in the beginning of Shmos, as soon as Hashem reveals himself to him, what does he say to Hashem? Heim lo yaminu li. Private miracles, people don't believe. Moshe Rabbeinu taught them that private miracles don't work. So why didn't you go for the public ones? Just read a couple chapters further, see the public ones, and copy them. Interesting. The answer is obvious, that you can't get away with those things.